Legally Blonde, Suits, My Cousin Vinny.
All badass lawyers, all different.
Which begs the question, what type of lawyer do you want to be?
Don't waste another second thinking, ugh, I don't even know what types of lawyers there are.
Trust us, we've been there.
Let's put a stop to that once and for all.
Go take the 90-second quiz from New Lawyer Now What coach Angela Vorpal to give yourself a clear picture of the best fit type law for you.
Go to www.whattypeoflawyerquiz.com and take the quiz today.
Once you've taken the quiz, send us a DM on Instagram to let us know what type of lawyer you got. We can't wait to hear. Guys, welcome back to the Ladies Who Law podcast. I'm Sam.
And I'm Haley.
And this week we have Miriam Arrington Fisher. She is a boss lady, as in she owns her very successful law firm in Virginia. And she shares how she got to that point as a single mom to literally a newborn, starting her new firm and scaling it to the, you know, to the way it is today. Like, it's amazing how it all panned out. So we're really excited to share.
Yes, we are. So let's dive in.
Please help us welcome our guest, Miriam Arrington Fisher. Hey, Miriam, how are you?
Hey, guys, I'm great. How are you?
We are doing great, and we're so excited to have you on the podcast today. So just to start off, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I've been practicing for 15 years, which sounds really long when I say that. Makes me feel old. I've been living in Richmond, Virginia. So I went to law school in Miami, and as soon as I graduated, I moved up to Virginia, started practicing here. For a long time, I was a criminal defense attorney primarily, and then I moved into immigration, which is mostly what I do now. I have my own firm. I started 8 years ago.
So let's go back to the beginning of like when you began your legal journey. Did you always know you wanted to be a lawyer, or was that something that kind of came later, or how did that work out?
No, I really was one of those people that wanted to be a lawyer since I was a little kid. I used to sleep at my grandmother's house on Friday nights, and we would watch all of those courtroom dramas, you know, Perry Mason, like those sorts of shows. And I just was really captivated by trial law and trial lawyers. And so I went and did that. And so I went through college and, you know, did the political science route, went straight to law school, and became a criminal defense attorney.
Okay, so you said you went to law school in Miami. So can you tell us about why you chose to go to law school there and kind of how you ended up where you're at now?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. I don't have a great reason for why I went to Miami. I was planning on staying in the Northeast. I went to college in DC. I went to GW for undergrad, and I was, you know, very ambitious. I graduated early. I was looking at all these law schools in the Northeast. And then my last year of college, I broke up with my college boyfriend. I had a friend that was down at University of Miami. I flew down to see her and partied all weekend and fell in love with Miami and the beach. And so I went back to DC and I applied early admission to University of Miami, and I got in, and that's where I went. And it was amazing. It was an amazing place to go to law school. I loved it.
So let's talk about going to law school, not where you end up practicing. So how was that, you know, going to a law school out of state and then moving back? And would you say that a lot of your fellow law student colleagues were from the Florida area, or were many of them from around the country?
I think in the short term, it seemed like it was going to be an issue. I remember, you know, third year of law school and everybody's looking for internships and talking to the Miami firms. And I kind of vaguely remember feeling a little panicked, like, you know, I don't have any connections with where I'm moving to. In Richmond, there is a law school up here. And so a lot of people went to law school up here. But I think after maybe the first year or two, people move around and migrate. And it really was less of an issue than I thought it would be. But I do remember in law school, there was seemed to be like a real emphasis on that, you know, finding a job, having a job lined up. I didn't. I graduated and that night I got on a plane and moved up to Virginia. I didn't have a job lined up. I had my bar class starting the next morning. I really didn't know anybody here. And, you know, at the end of the day, I had a job, you know, by the time I got my bar results.
So while you were in law school, did you have any, you know, challenges while you were there? Or, you know, do you have any other lawyers in your family that may have like warned you what law school was going to be like? Or how was that?
No, I didn't. I'm the first person in my family to go to law school. I was actually the first to graduate college. And I was really focused on getting trial experience in law school. It was kind of a shift for me in college. I was more, I think, like worried about my grades and academics. And then once I started law school, I really got involved in internships. I was working at the Miami-Dade Public Defender's Office. And that really gave me, I think, more of a real world perspective. Like, what am I actually going to be doing at the end of this? Does it really matter? You know, I did get some A's in law school. I ended up, you know, with a good grade point average. My first year was a little bit of a rude awakening on grade wise, but I think I really had a lot of connection to working and to practicing. And, you know, the lawyers that I worked under at the public defender's office, like they never asked about grades or, you know, law review or things like that. So because I had a public interest focus and really a trial focus, I wasn't really caught up in kind of the same law school stress, I guess sort of the classic law school stress of classes and grades and things.
So when you did get to that point, you know, your 3L year where you're thinking of jobs in the future and all that, what were some of the jobs that you were aiming towards?
I really wanted to be a public defender. So my dream was to be a criminal defense attorney. And I was really involved in a lot of public interest work as a law student. Like I said, I worked with the Miami-Dade Public Defender's Office. I did some volunteer work with the ACLU. And so I applied to all public defender's offices. This was in the, I guess it's the Great Recession is what they call it now. It was a recession, and government agencies had hiring freezes. So just as I was graduating, you know, it was a really bad year for graduating law school. So 2008, 2009, you know, firms were like rescinding job offers. There were hiring freezes. Everybody was kind of freaking out. So maybe that might've helped a little bit of why I wasn't as panicked, because it was normal to be in that position, but I was definitely looking at public defender's offices. Where I ended up right out of law school was at Legal Aid, which was a little different. It was doing civil work. But it was the same. It was obviously in the public interest. And also it was the same in the sense that I really was just hit the ground running. You know, I started day one. I didn't even have my bar results when I started. I started as a quote unquote law clerk and got a stack of files. And I had my first court appearance scheduled the day of my swearing in ceremony. So it was very much like, here you go practice law. And so I did that for a little bit. That was a great experience. But then as soon as an opportunity presented itself for me to move into criminal work, I did that.
We'll be right back.
Hey guys, we want to take a moment to talk about something that has been a game changer for us busy lawyers, Audible.
Yes, Audible has been our go-to platform for incredible audiobooks, offering an extensive library of thrillers, nonfiction, autobiographies, and mysteries.
And guess what? We've got a special treat for you. Audible is offering a free trial to our listeners, and all you need to do is check the link in the show notes. It's the perfect opportunity to experience the magic of audiobooks without spending a dime.
Speaking of thrillers, I know you're currently hooked on Never Lie by Freda McFadden. Samantha, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. The twists and turns in Never Lie have kept me on the edge of my seat during the workday and even when I'm on my daily walks. It's like having a suspenseful companion wherever I go.
And for those looking for some financial wisdom, I have been engrossed in My Money, My Way by Kamuku Love. It's packed with practical advice on managing finances, perfect for anyone trying to navigate the complexities of money management.
What we love most is the flexibility Audible offers. As lawyers, our schedules can be unpredictable, but with Audible, we can enjoy our favorite books on the go, whether we're stuck in traffic, hitting the gym, or waiting for a court hearing.
So, if you're ready to embark on a literary journey and discover the joys of audiobooks, click the link in the show notes to start your free trial with Audible. Trust us, you won't want to miss out on this fantastic offer.
So let's talk about that first job doing criminal work. What was it and what were you thinking when you finally got there and you were able to practice criminal defense, which you've been wanting to do for your whole life?
Yeah. So at Legal Aid, I'd been doing a lot of protective orders, custody, all kinds of civil stuff. I was recruited by a small law firm to go do criminal defense. And so it was, it's a little different now, but small law, criminal lawyers tend to be like really small firms, maybe a solo, maybe two or three partners. So it was like that. It was a small firm with two partners. They were pretty well known in the town that I was living in at the time. So I was super excited. They brought me on and I was just kind of swooped into their cases. And so I was, going to jail visits, doing trials with my boss, and then, before long on my own. And so even though it was moving into the private sector, the small firm world is not that much more structured. So I was staying at a small law firm. I had a lot of responsibility and also a lot of opportunity to do real work. I didn't feel like I was kind of just supporting the partners. I was really involved in making case decisions and trying cases very early on in my career.
So how long were you at this smaller firm doing this kind of work?
So I stayed at that first firm for 3 years, and then I moved over to another small law firm. It was very, very kind of small world in the same city. And that second law firm is really where I think my career took off. Mm-hmm. I was recruited to work there by a veteran criminal defense attorney in Richmond. He's very well known. He's done all kinds of famous, criminal cases in Virginia. And he became my mentor. He took me under his wing. I did capital cases with him. We did murder cases. We had a case that we appealed up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And working for him was just really like a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I was there for, I guess, another 4 years before I struck out on my own.
So what did that look like? You're going from working for somebody to, at what point were you like, I kind of want to do this for myself?
So my decision to go out on my own was very quick. I didn't have a lot of planning in 2016. I've been practicing, I guess, for about 7 years at that point. And I was going through a divorce and I was also having my daughter. And the firm was kind of breaking up. Everything kind of all happened at once. And what really for me hit me like a ton of bricks was, I'd been so hard charging earlier in my career. And I had no regrets about that. I loved it. I was working every day. I was at the jail at night. I was preparing on the weekends. But that was just going to be completely unsustainable. So looking at that and then looking at being, now a new single mom on top of just being a new mom, I just really didn't know how it was going to all work. And I didn't have a lot of planning time or lead time to figure that out. So I think I kind of just thought, well, I'll just figure it out on my own. I don't want to have a boss to answer to. I don't want to try to deal with trying to find another job. So I'm just going to get a little office and I have a couple clients whose cases are still going on and I'll just figure it out. So that's what I did. I was, I think it ended up being like 2 weeks before my daughter was born. I found a little office. Wow. I ended up, yeah, I know it sounds really crazy now, but, because the firm that I was working at was splitting up, there was a couple people that were kind of like looking for places to land. So I ended up sharing a suite with two other lawyers from the same firm and, you know, very bare bones. Mm-hmm. You know.
So can you tell us about, you know, you said that you had a few clients come with you from the, that you were still working with. What did that look like after having your baby and then trying to figure out how to build your own book of business and practice law?
Yeah, the clients that came with me, it was really small type of stuff. I mean, criminal cases are pretty short-lived. It's not like you have a huge retainer. It's usually flat fee and, you know, it's over in a couple months. So I just had a couple cases that I was wrapping up. It was probably like a few thousand dollars. You know, the firms that I had worked for were very old school, and old school lawyers do not advertise. So I had always been taught, you know, real lawyers don't advertise, just do a good job and you'll get referrals and you'll get a good reputation. That was what I had always, you know, been told. And I really started to question that once I was on my own. Now, I had been practicing for a few years. I had, you know, some referrals from prior clients. It wasn't like I had no business, but
yeah,
you know, if you can tell, I don't agree with that approach to marketing. I mean, you need to market, you need to network, you need to put yourself out there. Yeah. All of that was a huge education. None of that.
So can you tell us, you know, what you did different? You know, you worked with one of the renowned lawyers in Virginia and he didn't market and advertise. So now you're on your own. You're like, okay, I'm going to have to do this. Like, what does that look like as a lawyer?
So what I kind of just treaded water for the first few years, I would say for the first 2 years. Now I had a newborn, I was divorced. Mm-hmm. And so in those first 2 years, I was really just kind of on that hamster wheel. I really wasn't doing anything different than what I had worked under. I was just trying to do it for myself. I got remarried. I had another son. I inherited a stepson. And in 2018, 2019, I really started getting serious of, not that I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I felt confident in as a lawyer, but you know, where is this business going? Am I just going to be working forever, you know, treading water, hoping that somebody calls this week? And at that time, there were some resources available for building firms, nothing like what there is today. But in very end of 2019, like December 2019, I joined a mastermind for women lawyers. This particular mastermind doesn't exist anymore, but it was my first experience of, I'm really going to learn everything that I need to learn about running a business. And it was so eye-opening for me. It was completely different than anything that I had seen before. It was a group of women, mostly moms, because that was kind of a, you know, an aspect of it, but not all. And it was, you know, how are we going to build our firms, be profitable, you know, different levels of work-life balance considerations. And although the mastermind has ended, I'm still friends with those women today. And we informally meet and, you know, everybody's practice has just taken off like insane in ways that we never could have imagined. But it all started with us coming together and saying, we don't know the first thing about running a business. We need to learn all of this. And it was, you know, how to hire, how to build an organization, how to create systems, what kind of technology can we be using? Of course, marketing. You know, everybody who has a firm is worried about marketing, but that's really just one piece of it. And then I spent the next several years just absolutely immersed in developing my business and learning all of those things. And that was life-changing. But I never would have thought to do that or known to do that at the beginning of my career.
So how did you find out about, you know, this group of women to meet with? Like, where did you even hear about it?
It was in a Facebook group for women lawyers. And I had just started like hearing the term mastermind. Like, I think I started seeing it online, you know, kind of like, what's that? And then this, it was a Facebook group for women immigration law firm lawyers. And somebody posted, you know, I'm starting a mastermind. And I think I was like the first or second person to sign up. Cause I was just like, I don't even know what we're doing, but I know that I need to do something. I want to do something. I want to be with other women that want to create their, you know, create big law firms or scale their law firms. And yeah. I figured I had so much to learn. Like, it didn't even really matter what we were going to be learning. It was going to be better than what I knew at that point.
So after you go to this mastermind, after you start to build your law firm, walk us through what that looks like, and how, you know, your firm grew and what it became into today.
Sure. So like, I think a lot of small law firm owners, the first hire, I hired a paralegal. So I've been, when we very, very first started, when we were just sharing a suite, we all chipped in and had like a receptionist, you know, a shared receptionist who greeted clients and things like that. But I was still doing the administrative work. After about a year of that, I thought this is not sustainable. So I hired a paralegal. I actually hired a paralegal from the other firm that I had worked at. And I saw that, you know, it seems common sense, but it wasn't common sense to me before. You know, when you add somebody, then it takes things off of your plate and then your time expands. So, you know, hiring is probably the scariest thing for a small business, you know, because you think it's an expense. Can I afford this? How am I going to pay it? But if it's done right, or even kind of sort of right, you know, a new hire takes things off of your plate and then frees up your time to be more efficient, to take on more cases, to do more marketing. And so, I saw that with that first hire, and that I was really kind of hooked. Like, I was sold, you know, this is how we are going to grow this thing. So the very first hire was a paralegal. I then hired a second paralegal. I then hired an associate attorney, which I could have done. She's still with me today. She's a non-equity partner at the firm now. And slowly but surely, we just sort of built and scaled, and we add one person and then we move some tasks to them. And then that frees up more time. And then we add another person and so on and so forth. And so the first few hires were kind of common sense, you know, paralegal, associate. From there, at this point, I was actively working in like business development and learning about these sorts of things. So we started thinking more strategically about an organizational chart. Okay, who's going to be running the office? Who's going to be doing the finances? Who's going to be doing the marketing? What I developed after about 3 years, I developed a system of a client-facing team and a legal team, which is what we have today, which is really one of the secrets of our success. Because, you know, as a small law firm, we need to be competitive. We need to stand out with the value that we're creating. And one of the big things that law firms often miss the mark on is compromising client service for legal work. And so what we have is we have two completely separate teams. There's people that talk to the clients and help the clients, and they're really nice and good at customer service. And then there's the lawyers and the paralegals that are working on the case. And it's like the two don't meet. That has been really, really effective. We get amazing feedback from clients on the client service, and it doesn't compromise our casework and our productivity. So figuring that out was a big piece. And then delegating, you know, these days there's a lot of fractional options for small law firms. You can have a fractional CFO if you don't want to hire a full-time bookkeeper, you know, a fractional chief operating officer if you don't have a full-time office manager. So, and virtual work, that's obviously a huge thing. And that really exploded during COVID, was leveraging virtual assistants and, you know, remote workers to balance out the in-office. So those were really some of the kind of ingredients to success and to scaling. But I think a big thing was looking beyond just law. You know, like I said earlier, I didn't really see the model for what I wanted to do, which was like a highly efficient, profitable firm. And law is very entrenched in tradition. And this is the way that we've always done things. And you know, lawyers in general can be resistant to change. You hear now lawyers terrified of AI, you know, because one person did something really stupid. Now nobody wants to use this technology. You know, there's lawyers that still don't want to market because back in the 60s, you couldn't market. So being willing to accept and adopt technology and things that other industries are using and then apply them to law, I think is really kind of a secret to success.
So if you were to come across a young attorney who's having the same vision that you had, like they want a highly efficient firm of their own, mm-hmm. what would be your number one piece of advice, you know?
So I'm going to try to make it just one and not like one multi-part. I think what I wish I had done earlier, what I wish I had done sooner, maybe it's an easier way to answer this. I wish that I had just been willing to commit to my own vision earlier on. You know, I remember even back as an associate, I remember thinking, you know, we should do it this way, or this would be more profitable, or this would be more efficient. But all of the senior lawyers, all of the partners, all of the older lawyers were saying, no, we don't do it that way. And so, you know, it took me a couple years to get to the point where I was willing to try it. And, you know, I was right. I mean, not right about everything. I learned a lot and I made mistakes, but I wish that I had been willing to take those risks earlier on.
I had one question about your firm in particular, which I was interested in, like that client facing team versus the legal aspect. So for the client facing part of your team, are they attorneys or are they professional customer service representatives? How does that work? You know, like, and where did you come up with that idea?
So mostly not attorneys, mostly in the latter client service. And so, you know, what like sort of the client journey to our firm, what that looks like is someone calls our firm and then the first person they speak to is an intake specialist. They're not a lawyer. They're, you know, really a client service background. We've trained them on, you know, what we do, our case types, what we're looking for, how to screen things. And much in the way that personal injury screening processes, that's very similar. We've adapted that to our case types. Those intakes are reviewed by an attorney. And then if a client wants to come in for a consultation or if we think they need to come in for a consultation, then they meet with the attorney. Once they sign on, they get assigned to a client care manager. And that person is kind of like their liaison. So they're not answering legal questions, obviously, for the client, but they're facilitating all of the information. And this is, you know, I work with lawyers who are trying to build their firms or scale their firms. And this is always a big sticking point with lawyers because they think, well, clients want to talk to a lawyer. They need to talk to a lawyer. They don't. They just want their question answered. They do not care if it's you or not. You know, obviously, we all know that non-lawyers can't give legal advice, but probably about 98% of the reasons clients call are not for legal advice. You know, they're looking for some reassurance, or they're looking for an update, or they're looking for some information from their file. So in our representation agreements, it says your client care manager is going to be your point of contact. And so we have, clients get weekly updates, you know, your case has been filed, this is the processing time, or for our criminal cases, you know, your attorney's meeting with the prosecutor next week. And we're giving them constant updates so that they know what's going on. It's good for the clients, you know, because they have a right to know what's going on in their case. It's also good for business because then people aren't calling us and emailing us incessantly, like, what's going on in my case? What's going on? So it's kind of a proactive way to provide good client service. And all of that are things that do not need to be a lawyer or a paralegal. You know, the lawyers should be in court or they should be reviewing cases. Paralegals should be working up cases. So that's how the two teams work. You know, if there is a situation that really requires a legal meeting or if a client needs advice, then that they get set a call with an attorney. But I mean, that's like less than 5% of client communications, I think.
And I guess that setup is great too, because then the lawyers, like you said, they get to go to court. They can kind of focus on the lawyering aspect and not the administrative type tasks or like emailing clients back on little things and having to pull up the whole file and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, today there's so many case management systems and, you know, portals. So it's very easy for us, you know, we're a paperless office and everything goes through our case management system. So, you know, if a client calls in with a question about their case, you know, the client care manager or even the intake specialist can pull up and see the attorney's notes and, you know, see the most recent updates. And so you're exactly right. It's not something that needs to be, that the lawyer needs to be interrupted or the paralegal. And that's just like one small example, but it's such a game changer. If lawyers can accept the fact that they can let go of some of the calls and they don't need to be the one answering all those questions, I mean, it frees up untold hours. And that really, you know, leads to efficiency. You can do more business. You can make more money. You can work less. It's good for everybody.
Client care specialist. That's impeccable. I think that is something that would be a game changer in law for probably many, many firms. I work in family law, and I can just think about how many client calls and emails I have to answer every day. So I can only imagine having someone there to help with that liaison would be amazing. So that's such a cool idea. And
someone who's good at it, different skill set. Like, I'm not good at that. You know, I was a litigator and now I run a business. I'm not the right person to be, you know, listening and reassuring and stuff. Yep. So, but we have amazing people on the team that are really, really good at that. And, you know, when clients leave us reviews now, it used to be like, oh, Miriam's the best lawyer ever. You know, you should hire her firm. And now it's like, Andrea is so nice. You know, I love talking to Louisa. You know, they feel connected and they feel taken care of by other people at the firm.
So what is your vision for the future of your firm?
We are steadily growing. So we're 12 people now. We are really focused on the Central Virginia market. We're all bilingual. And so our, you know, primary kind of the bread and butter of our firm is immigration, is serving the Spanish speaking community. You know, we have some other areas, but that's really our main focus. And we've grown every year. And we're on track to grow again this year. We'll probably be adding another attorney and paralegal at least. We really are involved in the community. So, last year we brought our marketing in-house and we have a full-time marketing coordinator she does so much, but, you know, in addition to kind of the classic, traditional marketing and digital marketing, and we do a lot of, events, physical events out in the community, you know, panel presentations, clinics, festivals, things like that. So, all of us have really a lot of energy right now for really continuing to build a trust with the community. And really, we want to be the dominant name, in our market. We are Las Abogadas del Pueblo. It's currently an all women firm. We're just loving what we're doing right now.
Yes. Yes. It is amazing. So Miriam, will you tell the listeners where they can find you if they want to chat more or learn more about your firm or maybe even learn about opening up their own firm?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm on all the social media channels. My handle is Lawyer Like a Mother, and, my firm is Arrington Law. We're based in Richmond. My other business is Lawyer Like a Mother. My book is called Mom's a Lawyer, How to Start a Firm and Take Control of Your Life. And so my book, Mom's a Lawyer, How to Start a Firm and Take Control of Your Life, is a beginner's guide to starting a law firm. I wrote it truly as a, you know, what I wish I had when I first started my practice. It's, you know, day one. And that's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those sites. And the website is momsalawyer.com. So you can contact me on social media or contact me there. I love talking to people in all different stages of their career. When I wrote the book, I thought that the audience was going to largely be like mid to late 30s to 50s. You know, it's written for moms. But something that's been really amazing is a lot of the people who have contacted me have actually been earlier in their career, which I guess I should have foreseen. You know, we're lawyers or planners and type A. But I've been talking a lot with young lawyers at the very beginning of their career, where they're trying to think strategically about like, what are they building and, you know, how to build their careers. So I always love talking to young lawyers as well. And that's why I was so excited to see the work that you guys are doing, because I love being a lawyer. I think it's a great career. I think it's a great career for women. I want to see more women in the law. I want to see more women in leadership in the law and law firm ownership. So I'm really grateful that new lawyers and law students have resources like you guys to get that information down to them, because it took me years to, you know, kind of get a handle on what I wanted out of my career.
Well, we really appreciate everything that you've shared today. I'm sure that our audience is going to be eating this episode up, because I know that as an aspiring potential law firm owner in the future, like, it's always nice to hear how people got to the point that they're at. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Miriam is so cute. I'm literally obsessed with her cute little outfit. I know that you guys can't see it, but she has like pink earrings and this like really fun dress. Like, never in my wildest dreams did I pin her down for a criminal defense attorney. So it was really, really cool to talk with her and just, you know, get to know her and know that that's what she wanted to do her whole life. So I'm not shocked that that's what she does, but also that she kept up with it and pushed through and despite, you know, the hiring freeze when she first graduated. And, you know, also, I can't believe she worked at the Miami-Dade Public Defender's Office. Like, how freaking cool is that?
I know. I was about to say, I was like, I think she needs to talk to my husband, because, like, her career trajectory sounds like exactly what he wants to do. So I'm, like, so excited to share this episode with him.
Absolutely. You know, and I feel like there's so many people out there that are going to be excited to hear this. And, you know, her advice of, you know, why didn't I do this sooner, or not to be scared. It's very something that I feel like, you know, like you said, your husband might feel, and that many people who want to do this feel, but are nervous and scared to go out on their own.
Yeah, I think a lot of what we're told is that there's a lot of risk, obviously, in starting on your own. And all of us aren't necessarily, you know, have business degrees, you know, not all of us got our MBAs along with our JD. So I think the business aspect is something that is so, it can be so scary to a lawyer. But obviously, as Miriam said, like, there's groups. So if you are interested in, you know, owning your own firm, probably find a Facebook group of like similar lady lawyers in that type of field, because it might be a great place to start, even, you know, figuring out what your vision looks like.
Absolutely. Well, guys, I think we learned the importance of community and how it can help you build to become a successful lawyer and a successful entrepreneur. Gosh, it's hard to talk today. But we really are glad that we were able to have Miriam on here today. If you have any guests that remind you of Miriam or remind you of any of our other previous guests, please let us know about them so we can reach out and ask them to join us on the podcast.
Yes, we love sharing everyone's unique individual story with you guys, just because, as we've said before, the law is extremely expansive, and every single time we have someone on, we're just learning like new things. So we love it, obviously. So yeah, if you love any specific lawyers, let us know. We'll reach out to them. In the meantime, follow us on Instagram at the Ladies Who Law Podcast, and hit subscribe, because I'm sure you'll want to know when the next episode comes out.
Amen. Make sure and subscribe. Follow wherever you listen, and we will talk to you guys again next week. Stay safe, stay happy, stay healthy, and we love you guys. Bye.
Bye.